For reference, this episode was recorded prior to the most recent FAR update. While that doesn't change the content or relevancy of the episode, it is something to keep in mind of. Hope you guys enjoy it.
Welcome to Path to Glory, a Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. Jonathan here, continuing our Warband Wisdom series, where Iman and I are taking turns covering each warband with a special guest. My special guest today is Niccolo, who is here to help me talk about the Thorns of the Briar Queen warband. How are you doing today, Niccolo?
I'm good. You can call me Nick. You gave it your best try. It's fine.
Sure. I don't think we've had you on the podcast before, so that's exciting.
You promised me to have me in your podcast a couple of times before.
We have kind of pulled you around. We said you were going to do Profiteers, and then we moved you to this one. But
you also kind of invited me for the Grand Clash in January, and you were like, "Yeah, you know what? We're called Sandro. He won."
Well, we'll try to make up for it today. That's funny. The first question is just how long have you been involved in the hobby?
Okay, so I went into the hobby basically with some friends when the Iron Joes, Iron Skull Boys, and the Sepulchre Guards were out. So right from the very start, I guess. And then I went in from my birthday, which was on February day. My friends gave me for present the Skaven and Fire Slayers, and so I went into.
Cool. Yeah, that was pretty close to the beginning. I guess that's. Yeah. I started with Night Vault, so I'm not exactly sure what the timing was like, but I can't imagine you missed too much there. What is it about Underworlds that you like? What do you think is your favorite part about it?
I think it's a lot to manage because it's really a lot for a tabletop game. I don't have a tabletop background. I'm more like, I consider myself somewhat a chess player, but a beginner chess player, somewhat a card player, but like not super into. I don't like play Magic. I played some Hearthstone, some stuff, and I think it's fun because you can like manage position, manage cards. It's a lot of stuff to bring to. You have to pay attention to a lot, but it's really fun and the community is awesome.
Yeah, it certainly is. Are there any special achievements you're currently proud of in the world of Underworlds?
Well, I think my biggest achievement so far is my show up at January Grand Clash, which is the only Grand Clash which I went undefeated on day one, which gave me the first place, which I was super proud of, and then lost badly first round on day two. Because it's
still a great showing though. I think you 2-0'd all four of the first rounds,
right? Yeah, 2-0 everybody. And also I beat the first two people at the skirmish. The two people who were at the finals, the skirmish on day two. I faced them and beat them 2-0 the day before. So
Very cool.
I was really proud of myself and then lost badly. So it didn't matter.
Yeah, that can happen. Are you working on anything game or hobby-wise right now?
I'm painting my worm's path because we have COVID, like everybody else. In Italy especially, we have COVID. And I painted nothing because I worked from home and didn't have any more free time at home. So I'm restarting now.
Yeah, I think the only thing I've done during this whole thing is prime my man trappers. So I know how you feel.
Yeah, I primed a lot and say, yeah, I can start tomorrow. I never did.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that's it for the intro, unless you had anything else you wanted to add. Let's dive into the warband. We're talking about the Thorns of the Briar Queen warband. And what is it, Nick, that you like about this warband? And what do you think, for new players, what makes it worth learning and playing?
Okay, I love the warband since day one, because back in Shadespire, I played a lot of skeletons and a lot of skavens. I like to play hold objectives, and that playstyle was kind of iffy because like reconcussion was around and earthquakes, and it was different meta. But like skeletons have some issues because their best fighter had to stay back, and they were slow as hell. and Skaven had some issue because they have sometimes too few pieces for holding objectives. But Screech was the greatest and probably still is. So when the Thorns came out and we have like the preview that was leaked on Reddit and all this kind of stuff, I was pretty excited because I could have seen a lot of skeletons and a lot of Screech in there. Like it seems to me like it's skeletons with Screech. And I could do a lot of stuff. Like I could have played a hold objective and built a super fighter who has range to attack and kill everybody. And that's what they are, basically. And they have great cards. They have great stats. And I think probably they're the warband that stayed at top of the meta for the more time.
Yeah, I think you could pretty safely say that they've been the most successful warband since their release. I think they've won at least, I think, two or three Grand Clashes, and they're constantly in the top two. So
yeah, and basically every good warband has his moment. Like there was a moment for Iltharis Guardian 2 where you could win Grand Clashes only if you play Iltharis, and then that's it.
Yeah.
I think at every event, if Thorns win it, you're fine. You say, yeah, it can happen. They're good. There's not really a moment in the meta where they're not good.
Yeah, I think they really have all the tools they need to hold the objectives and play that style very, very well. So I think they'll be relevant as long as that style is relevant. It seems like every now and then we'll have a meta that really punishes the Horde warbands, and that's probably the only time they'll fall off. So let's talk about the fighters. Let's go into each one briefly and how do they work together to make a complete warband?
Okay, so their leader and probably one of the best, if not the best fighter in Underworld, is the Briar Queen. I think the Briar Queen is a really special piece, not only because their stats, which are bonkers, but also because how it plays. So the Briar Queen, uninspired, has two dodges on defense, four wounds, which is big, only three movements, but a massive attack because she has a range 2 with three swords and two damage attack. All the warband inspire when they start an activation next to an enemy model, which can be tricky to do, but once there is inspired, the Queen goes to four speed and massively three damage. And also, she's a level 2 caster, because why the heck not?
Yep, it's the magic season.
Yeah, everybody's a caster now. The Queen is basically your heavy hitter. And one thing I notice is it's a lot like the Queen on chess.
Yeah.
Like, it's the most important piece on your checkboard. It's the one that like puts threat to the crucial pieces. And you have to learn when to put her in the middle of the board and control the board. And she's the best fighter at sniping people because Sudden Appearance, which is one of their cards we can go back later, it's awesome because she can teleport right next to another one. She goes to three damage and pretty much that's a kill right there. So they're the best one. Yeah. If you need to kill a crucial fighter in round one, they're the best one to do.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation. I mean, I think almost to the point where you could probably do some cool conversions where you turn this warband into a chess set. They kind of have a queen and a king and like maybe a bishop as well as some pawns.
Yeah, now you're talking about it. I want to do that.
Yeah, that's actually a really cool idea. it's like half of a chess set. That maybe that's how they thought of it. They saw half of a chess set in mid game or something.
Yeah.
I mean the queen is. I think you're right. I think that the queen is up there for one of the most powerful fighters. And then I think if you look at any warband, even similar to the Thorns of the Briar Queen, I don't know if there are any warbands with a leader as good as she is, with as good of a warband along with her. I mean, Screech in a lot of ways is, I would say, very similar. And so is the Warden, and so is Grimwatch, but the Grimwatch leader. But man, the rest of the warband is just so good as well. That the Queen, a lot of the time you can just afford to sort of throw her into the enemy, and then they have to deal with her. So yeah, very interesting.
Also, she can take basically every good upgrade in the game.
Yeah, that's true.
Like she can have Eldritch Ward. There was a time where she had both Sudden Growth and Deadly Fortitude, but she didn't lack movement because she had like Unescapable Vengeance. So it was this like 8-wound fighter, which teleported away around on the set and sniped everybody. And also having range to it means it's really easy to target trap fighter.
Yeah.
And she can attack multiple times in one round without charging, which is also massive.
Yeah, that's very true. And let's go to who I think initially some people may have thought was the leader of the warband, Varklav. What do you think about him?
So basically, Varklav is what the warden is to the skeleton. So he's the one who's responsible for action economy. I think Varklav, since day one, is one of the most like misinterpreted fighter in this warband. Because at the warden, the first lesson you learn when you play skeletons is the warden has to stay back like all the time. Even if it's possible, you have to save him. Varklav has the best action economy in all the game because he can push all the chain rasp, which are the five other fighters we didn't talk about, up to 2 axes once per turn. So he can do it multiple times. But like the warden needs to do that like 3 times for moving people onto objectives and maybe closer to enemies and stuff like that. Varklav can do it once and then it's good to go. And he's a good fighter because has the queen. He goes uninspired with movement 3, 2 dodges, 4 wounds. He has 2 hammers, 2 damages. And once inspired, he goes to 4 speed and 3 damages. So basically it's really similar to the queen, besides it has range 1 and not range 2, and it goes on 2 hammers instead of 3 swords.
Yeah, he's a great fighter. I mean, he's one of, he really has some of the best stats of any fighter. So it's interesting that I think a lot of people do try to keep him safe so they can use his utility. But I think you also need to keep in mind the power that he can give.
Yeah, I think they wanted to make something like, we made a good choice with skeletons because the warden is a great piece and he has to stay back for the economy, but they lack a good fighter. So they put Varklav and the queen, but also Varklav is a good fighter. So you really don't need to let him sit in the back of the board for all the time. I think back in Nightfall, it was even better because also sudden appearance was for the queen and like hidden path was for Varklav. That was your designated deployment card, basically.
Yeah, you could sort of let Varklav be either the second wave or the like home defense if the other player brought in somebody with hidden paths.
Now you can stay in the front way to...
Sorry, what?
Now you can stay like in first line because it's hard for people to kill him like in round one, in activation one.
Exactly. Yeah, we used to have a lot more damage in Nightfall with trap and pit trap and twist and the knife and cards like that. So as the meta fluctuates, he's able to kind of bully a little bit more, I think.
Also, an important feature we didn't talk about this warband, they don't take damage from lethal axes. They treat lethal axes as normal axes. Yeah. And when they make a move action, they can move through occupied and blocked axes, which is massive. Like there's like a couple of upgrades that can manage a fighter to do that. Everybody has that, which is bonkers. Even when you think in Beastgrave you have lethal axes everywhere, they just ignore it.
I mean, especially with the player placed ones and then a lot of the boards that were added late Nightfall and during Beastgrave, the that ability is very meaningful. And then, you know, now with all the distractions and things where normally you'd want to be pushing people into the lethals, they're immune to that as well. So it's definitely a big big strength, the warband. And I think a lot of people also can overlook the ability to move through other fighters during a move action, because a lot of the time that can be, you know, the difference between making a charge or not. So
a lot of time it's just +1 speed straight up.
It is. Cool. Well, let's go to the Everhanged, who is also just a great fighter.
Why the heck not? So the Everhanged is another good fighter. Is is, let's say, is the third in range, in charge, because he has four movements straight away, which is makes him the faster fighter from the get-go. Only one dodge and three health. And he has an attack, which is two hammers and two damages. Once he's inspired, he gets his second dice on defense, and his attack gains cleave.
Yeah.
The Aberrant usually is deployed up front, because a range attack won't kill him in round one. And it's good for Valklav to like push everybody else on objective and push him closer to an enemy. So if they don't like move away from him, he gets cleave, and now he gets scary, because... it's accurate a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, the second dodge can be really annoying too.
Yeah, once it's inspired, it's really good. Usually is also the first fight that your opponent's trying to get down, because is the you don't want him to inspire and get your second dodge. You want him to kill when you have one dodge, and it's manageable, let's say.
Yeah, I think it's also very important that he is a chain rasp, so you can move him around with a Varklav action, which a lot of the time can mean... you know, you can make a farther charge, or you don't have to make a charge. You can move next to somebody and then get attacks off. So he's just a very, very flexible fighter for that reason.
Yeah, you can also like push him two axes away in round one, in turn one, and turn two he can just move four, so he can like get an objective back on the other opponent warband territory.
Yeah, exactly. We can probably, I would say, lump the chain rasps together.
Basically. I don't even remember what their difference is. I look at their card, what they do. Everybody has like three movement and two health and one dodge. And one day, once they're inspired, they get to two dodges. And their attacks are different. Like they mostly have like one or two swords or one hammer and get like two damages or cleave or... basically, right. One of them has knockback. I don't know. If anybody used it, just let me know, but I don't think so.
Yeah, the one with the club has knockback, and he hits on 3 fury, which is fairly accurate. I've had the headless one with cleave actually be sort of useful now and then. I don't think you should forget about the cleave there. Then the other two with the axe and the piece of wood... they do go to 2 damage. They only hit on 2 fury, but if you have support or something, that can...
They have 2 damages from the get-go, but just 1 sword, which is a lot unreliable.
Yeah, I wouldn't rely on that too much. I think once they inspire, though, they could be pretty decent. But I would say generally you want to use these guys to hold your objectives.
Basically they hold objective, and if they manage to get in fight, probably you want to give a weapon to them.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have a favorite fighter for any reason?
I think the Briar Queen has to be my favorite fighter. She's really good, but also she makes the transition from chess to this game like a lot easier, and like you teach a lot. And it's also useful for the ones who play it to like learn how to deploy fighters and how to deploy based on the cards you got and stuff like that. I think it's fine.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a good choice. So now that we've covered how the warband works, how would you describe their strengths and their weaknesses?
Okay, so their biggest strength is they have a mix of great stats and great cards. Their faction cards are probably the best cards in the previous 2 seasons. Probably only the Cursebreakers have better cards than them. And maybe the Profiteers to some extent. But besides them, they have a lot of great cards. Like, you can have the base set of Nightfall and like one expansion, and you can get a good deck.
Yeah, of course, that's true.
Not a Grand Clash winning deck, but a solid deck you can play, you can win some games with.
Yeah, I think they're definitely one of the most functional, you know, out of the box or with a small collection.
And also the other time we already talked about, they have the best fighter in the planet, which would can be nuts. Like she can be one that like kill Thundrake on round one, or can like put really close to death on Hrothgar and Molag on turn one, which it's huge. Like it's that huge. Their weakness is that they have a lot of targets and they don't have a resurrection mechanic. Thank God. Don't give it. That's it.
Yeah.
So, sometimes they fear a lot against weapons that has pink damage and like some sort of AoE damage. Like they feared a lot of Fire Striders with Shardgale and Curse Breaker with Shardgale. Now they can suffer like Wurmfat with pink damage. Again, Curse Breaker with pink damage or Fire Strider with pink damage because they're coming back somewhat.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in Night Vault, one of the only things that was sort of keeping them down was when Molog was really popular, because when he got Tome of Offerings, he could sometimes just outscore.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think later on, after Molog had been hit a little bit by the restricted lists, Shardgale and then the ping damage with Farstriders, Profiteers, things like that, have kind of shown that if you hit them hard enough and you're able to ping them down quickly enough, then you know, they do have some weaknesses there. And I think we're probably experiencing something kind of like that as well in the current meta with Hrothgorn and maybe even the Wurmspat, things like that.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest. I remember in Nightfall, I used to run some decks which they had like Tainted Vitality because I hated Shardgale, but that was a game-changing card.
Yeah, so
I think that's their biggest weakness.
Yeah, if you lose too many fighters too quickly, you can start to run, especially if you're trying to hold a bunch of objectives, you just start running out of options. And
And also another weakness they have, they are somewhat slow to rack up damage. Like you need probably both Great Strength and Glory Seeker in your deck all the time because the Briar Queen can take Stink of the Earth Grub. But that's also true. They don't have like some shenanigans or ping damage in their faction cards to use. They don't have like the seized weapon, or they don't have like a ploy that deals damage. So, or you take Pit Trap, which is a restricted card, or you need Great Strength and Glory Seeker for it.
Yeah, I think that I would probably include both of those. Although I guess it depends on the style that you want to play them, which I think is basically the next question. What strategies or play styles do you think they're naturally good at? And then are there any alternate ways to play them?
Okay, so we said it about it. They're really good at holding objective and like building a fighter that can wreak havoc in all the warband. In all the territory, and they can do both styles at the same time. Like it's not that difficult to build a good old objective and upgrade on the Briar Queen deck, and can be like good in all the iteration of the meta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the classic build when they came out was, you know, you take Supremacy, you take Our Only Way Out. Now you could take Path to Victory, and basically the Queen and the Everhanged would kind of push back the enemy. And a lot of the time the Queen can just take out your whole warband if she rolls well. And then while they're doing that, you have to choose between stopping them or stopping the Chain Rasps from holding all the objectives. So
So it's a lot to target. You basically have too much target priority and too much big targets to it.
Yeah, that's true. What other ways have people found success with them, or have you tried to play it? Them in
I play them in a lot of ways. So one popular build is the full hold objective deck. And I say with the tactical supremacy, with keys, with all that kind of stuff. They're pretty mobile because the sudden appearance is a good card and they can be pushed around. So choosing a specific objective is doable for them. It's not that doable for Skellies. Like you need to maybe cycle objectives. It's not such a big problem for them. So I think that is a doable style. They can also be like aggro, a lot of aggro. Like Phil Foden used them in the Grand Clash in October, I guess. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Phil Kelly was playing them very aggro. Yeah, I think he had aggressive defense in there, and that was really interesting.
Yeah, I used aggressive defense back in Nightfall. It was like one of my staples.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, it is really good on the Queen and Barclav, and probably the Everhand a lot of the time,
yeah, too. And back in the time, you used, like, also Sudden Growth, Deadly Fortune, and Last Chance. You can mm-hmm. you could, like, die by getting into your aggressive defense and use Last Chance to get back. And
Yeah, Last Chance was an incredible card for them.
Yeah, that's
I definitely missed that one. I've in the online version of the game right now, they've released the Thorns of the Briar Queen. And I've seen a lot of people playing My Turn as well, and it works in a very similar way.
So, yeah, kind of work in similar ways, correct.
Yeah. yeah, and I think it's really interesting, because I know that Dean Bills has played them, and he mostly relied on the innate abilities of the Everhanged and the Queen and Barclav, and then focused very heavily on the objective play. And I think that is a really good strategy, because those fighters are just so good as is that if they can cause you enough trouble, and then you can be on the objectives that you need to be, and you probably have more push cards than the opponent, then you're able to secure those big end phase scores, you know, at least especially in Nightball. I know in the games I played against his Thorns, it always just seemed like he had, you know, one step ahead of me and one more sidestep and one more Faneway. And it was very tough. And it wasn't until I had the Profiteers of the Shard Gale that I was able to just blow everything apart.
So, that was your revenge.
Yeah. It's funny. I got to play him a few different times, and it's just tough. And he's a great player. But yeah.
Another playstyle we didn't talk about is the one that gave John Reese one of his Grand Clash winners,
which was
the Swarm, like, let's say, playstyle. It was a deck that he perfected. I think he got it from a friend of his, if I remember correctly, and like, he fine-tuned it for competitive playness. I don't think it's the, like, most efficient way to play them, but it's viable. It can take a lot of people by surprise, and they can do it. Like, they can take objectives that you easily dislike because it's not doable. Like, ganging up, it's one for having all the access adjacent to enemy fighter to be occupied or blocked or basically incomplete. So you need to swarm everybody or get someone in an Ajax. And you cannot do it with any other warpen, basically. You can do only with them. And they can rip up, because Barclav can do it and do it and do it, and they have cards for it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think at the specific time that he played it, it was a very interesting meta call, and it was definitely unexpected. I know that he talked about how it was a particularly good counter against the Hidden Paths sort of meta, because people would Hidden Paths in, and then he could play like Drifting Advance, or he could do a Varclav move and then score two glory off of that. And then that fighter would be surrounded, and he could probably get a kill that way, things like
and
that.
And his fighters get inspired, and so they get more durable. They're harder to hit. He got support for his attack. So he synergizes very well with the warband. So kudos to him.
Yeah, it was a really cool deck, and I think that's one of the things about this warband is that they can really – like, they're so flexible in their design and with their card options that you can kind of tune them to the play style that you want to have. Currently, I've seen people playing them with very little focus on the objectives. They may have Path to Victory, and they may have some surges, but that's about it. And the rest is an aggro focus. So,
I think we can safely assume that they're the best flex warband ever. Like, they're the best at doing everything.
Yeah, I think they may be. Somebody has to be, so I think they're a good candidate. Let's go to the next one. I guess we've touched on it a little bit. How would you play them in the current meta?
Okay, so I guess the current meta is really like an iteration of the old meta. Like, you take some good surges, some easy one, and you double down on end phase hold objectives, because you can do it without too much trouble. And then you, like, put some upgrades to the Briar Queen and maybe some Emberbone weapons to the Chain Rasp, and you, like, double down on glories with that.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think you could do Coveted Spoils, you could do Uncontested. I think you could just do Path to Victory if you wanted to.
Yeah,
weirdly, I think in the current meta, I actually wonder if Supremacy is worth it, because it's actually kind of hard to do sometimes.
Yeah.
But, with all the objective removal and all the distractions and stuff. So
Uncontested is easy for them, because they can use Howling Vortex to just do it. They can also use, like, Mischievous Spirits. Like, if they end the round, they can use Mischievous Spirits and then use Varclub to grab their objectives.
Yeah, with the last activation, yep.
And close it like that.
Yeah, they're unique in that way that, unlike a lot of other warbands, if you play Mischievous Spirits in the middle of the round, they almost just don't care at all. Whereas you may be able to mess up a Grimwatch or maybe even a Goblins. That way. So
also, they're the only warband they can score. Probably also the Goblin can, but they can score a Scrum and Temporary Victory in one activation.
Yep. Yeah, probably at the same time.
And at the same time, too. Yeah.
This was a bit of a sidebar, I guess, but I was playing against Jimmy's Gits, and he scored Scrum, Temporary Victory, and I think Swift Capture all at the same time.
Yeah.
Inspired. And then drew into a whole new hand of objectives. And he was like, this is the first time this has happened, and I love it.
Jimmy, I hate your deck. I love it, and I hate it so much.
I know. It's such a nightmare to play against. But Thorns really can do basically the same thing. So there are some great cards in the current meta for them. I mean, I think it's safe to say they pretty much dominated the meta before Mantrappers came out. And even now that I think Mantrappers and Nurgle have decent games into them, I think they're still one of the top warbands. So
there was a time before the last ban and restricted, actually. It was in January. They were just stupid. Like, they could take Transfixing Stare, Temporary Victory, and Double Down with Sudden Growth, Spirit Bond, and Tome of Offerings, and they had everything. And they were just unplayable. Yeah.
They really are uniquely suited to where they kind of like most strategy, like most cards that come out, because they're so flex, they can use a lot of the good cards one way or the other. So,
And that also, is interesting about a quick tip for Graham's Workshop: if a warband needs only upgrades as restricted cards, they have too many good cards.
Yeah, or maybe the list needs an update, but that's funny. I think that is a good metric, though.
Yeah, and I think they were also the top of the tier even when Grimwatch won everything, because I think they have a better game into Grimwatch than Grimwatch had into them.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting thing about the Grimwatch meta. I guess my opinion is that the Grimwatch are more, I think about it like they're more spiky when it comes to their wins and their losses.
Mm-hmm.
When the Grimwatch combination comes off and their cards come out in the right order, it's almost impossible to stop them.
Oh, yeah.
In ways that I don't know if the Thorns really have those same heights. But I don't think Grimwatch are as reliable. So I think when Grimwatch were doing well, we would see a lot of Grimwatch players. And then one or two would slip through and then, win a bunch of unfavorable matchups. Whereas also, I think Thorns are just more consistent.
In January, Thorns were a lot of players. And Sandro that won the Grand Clash, I don't think he faced Thorns or he faced just once.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, and, matchups can be a big, big part of doing well in a Grand Clash, so.
Also, I didn't face Thorns on day one, so that's why I went so good. But
yeah, the luck of the matchup can be such a big deal getting through those events. So even right now in the current meta and all the data that I'm, I track from the BCP and the deckers and things like that, Thorns have a very good win rate. I believe it's in the 60s or 70s. I'd have to check again, but. It's definitely positive, even though I think they actually have a couple counters now. So very interesting. Actually, it's 56 right now. So that's actually high, but good. But, not too crazy.
Yeah, not too crazy.
Yeah. Let's go into their cards. What are your favorite faction cards? And then what kind of cards are you looking for when you build a Thorns of the Briar Queen deck?
Okay, so I think their biggest, the most important cards they have is one objective, which is Treacherous Foe. Treacherous Foe is an objective that it's a search for one glory that is scored when your warband uses a reaction. And the fact that not one of your fighter has a reaction built in means that you have to build your deck with plenty of reactions, which kind of mold the playstyle for yourself because you take reaction. But reactions actually are pretty good, so it's not like that big issue, but you kind of build something like that. Also, they have like two crazy strong cards, which are Howling Vortex, which is a spell, so only when the Briar Queen is alive can be cast. It goes off with one channel focus. I don't remember the name.
Yeah, it's a focus. So it ends up being a 75% chance.
Yeah, it's a 3 out of 4. And you can basically use distraction on everybody else on the opponent team, which is to be a bit broken, to be honest, but okay, I'll take it. And also they have Sudden Appearance, which is the best teleport in the game. You choose a fighter, you place it in any starting X, and that's it. No move token, no charge token, no
need. It doesn't matter if they already had a charge token.
Yeah, you can do it. You mostly use it for like inspiring someone close to someone that you want to be dead. But you can also use it to like retreat. You can use it to reposition yourself. It's like one of the best cards. And also they have other, like, let's say more situational good cards. I think Maddening Cackle is something that is worth talking about.
Yeah.
Because Maddening Cackle is one card that breaks Moloch, that breaks Cursebreakers, can break Rothgorm, which is, it's harder to do, but can do some damage to him too.
Rippas, it's really good against Rippas.
Or Rippas is dead when Maddening Cackle goes out. Yeah, good call.
Yeah. Yeah, and any warband that relies on one big fighter to take you down is really going to hate Maddening Cackle.
Yeah,
and it's a reaction, which is important for...
Yeah, and it's Treacherous Foe, of course.
Treacherous Foe, yeah.
I think the biggest win goes to Cursebreakers and Moloch, because when Moloch inspired charge for the first time, and you use Maddening Cackle, and that's game.
Yeah, I think you're right. And those are two matchups that Thorns don't really like in the first place. So having Maddening Cackle as, the remedy there. I know actually when John Reese won his Grand Clash with the Thorns in his Swarm deck, he was against Cursebreakers in the final, and I believe he basically said that one of the reasons he did so well in the final was because he had Maddening Cackle in his hand in the first two rounds.
That's pretty important. Once Averon Storm, goes to like stay at one damage and one shield in defense, it's a lot more manageable.
It's a big deal. It's one of the most powerful cards in the game. And let's see. We talked about Endless Malice a little bit. You just get to attack again. I think
it's pretty good. It's a reaction.
It's a good card. Yeah.
So goes double. Another good one. It's an Inescapable Vengeance, which is an upgrade. It's restricted to the Queen, but basically the Queen can ignore her move characteristic and just place them in any starting X. You can't use it for scoring a shortcut because you make a move action, but basically you can go everywhere. Like she now is the most like fast fighter in the game, and she can be bulky too because you can double down with like Sudden Growth and Deadly Fortitude. So she goes to a lot of wounds, but she doesn't like have the problem of speed or something like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, a lot of the time, I find that I don't always take this card when I play them. And I think part of that is because you're also relying on the cards like Sudden Appearance. But when she has this and you have Sudden Appearance, you have so much mobility. And I think it's also interesting that you have to go to starting hexes with both of those cards. So if you're playing the Thorns and someone does play a Mischievous Spirits or something, you can keep in mind that you could move an objective onto one of those.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you can also go onto an objective. And things like Restless Prize are good for that as well. But and that could actually also lead into things like Bold Conquest or Swift Capture or Temporary Victory.
Cool. But also, like think about it. When somebody place like a big upgrade on somebody, or like a couple of upgrades to a fighter that makes him a threat, you like every turn you count the axes. Like, you don't want that fighter to be in charge of your crucial piece.
Exactly.
And once she has this card, you cannot count anymore.
Yeah, I think I have had situations where careful positioning can you can block the starting hexes, but it's so hard to do.
But
especially if she doesn't already have sudden growth or something.
It's not Fenwick Crystal, so she doesn't need to do that. Like, exactly. She can move normally if she wants to.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think the combo with Sudden Growth or Deathly Fortitude is, you know, a common one. So I think it's something to keep in mind if you know that her mobility is reduced, or if it comes out early before she's inspired. Sometimes you can at least keep one fighter safe. But yeah, it just gives her so much flexibility that it is a cool card. Did you have any other cards you wanted to mention?
I want to mention Swarming Spirits, because it's a card that I see today. It's still popular, and I never liked this card, so I want to discuss that.
Sure.
So Swarming Spirits is another surge, and says Cortez immediately, if two or more friendly fighters move through a hex occupied by an enemy fighter in this phase. So I think it's good, because you don't need to roll dice for it, which is nice. And I think it's one of them that you can score after you made those actions.
Yeah, you can. Yep, that's in the FAQ.
So yeah, this is something that's worth considering. But also, I don't think you want to move too many fighters. And especially you don't want to move through other fighters to like be somewhere else. Like, you just want to push the Chain Grasp. You want to like maybe do one charge with the Briar Queen. And maybe one charge with the Ever End, because the Briar Queen can most likely attack twice and charge once.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
One attack and one charge. And the Ever End, you don't want to like cross somebody, because you want to score this card. And if you have this on like first round of the game, do you really want to like go to some extent in your opponent's territory to like cross them for scoring it? I don't know. I think this card puts you in bad positions, and I'm not a fan of it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think that you're right, especially if you're going into the hold objective side of the, like if you're flexing more into the hold objective side. I could see if you're doing more of an aggro situation. I mean, I've seen some Thorns decks that take keep chopping because they plan to just charge or attack almost every activation. And I think I could see it being useful in those kind of decks. But if your focus is going to be on the end phase and holding the objectives, and I mean, a lot of the time I'll move Varclav and then I'll play Sudden Appearance and then attack three times with the Queen. So I think you're right that you don't want cards that can possibly make you do inefficient actions. And right now I wouldn't say that we're starved for surges either. So
yeah, they have a good way. I was talking about you before we recorded. I was like, okay, let's cross some good surges for them. And I found 11, which are a lot.
Yeah, it's a good thing they can only take six. Let's see. I think we also mentioned before the call, they don't really have that many good faction end phase cards. I think the only one I like at all is Take the City, which is one glory for holding all the objectives on one or more game boards. I guess it is important to mention that also means the
No Man's Land.
If it's in No Man's Land, because that's considered to be on both boards. And I'd say that's a pretty solid end phase card, but you know, maybe one to keep in mind at the beginning of a season when there aren't as many cards around. But I'd say it's one of the first to take the cut. Yeah, I agree. And I think Supremacy and, you know, things like that will be more worth the trouble a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Other than that, I think I like Drifting Advance quite a bit.
I like Drifting Advance, especially in the Swarm, Confederation. And Drifting Advance is good for scoring other two, like, somewhat good searches they have. There are Death Sentence, the one for having three fighters next to another fighter, which is trivial with that card because you don't even need to wait for an end of the activation. And the other one is, I don't remember how it's called. It's the one for having like two fighters inspired at the same time. I think.
Yeah, that was from the Power Unbound, I believe.
Yeah, and that was definitely Clutches. Yeah, correct.
Yeah, you have two fighters inspire at the same time. So I think...
Because, like, imagine someone charges at you and miss, so it's next to a fighter, then you play Sudden Appearance, and boom, you have two fighters inspire.
Yeah, yeah, and then probably get support, too.
Yeah.
That's a... Sudden Appearance itself is just lets them do so many amazing things. It's a great, great card. Other than that, I think they kind of just have a few upgrades here and there that are potentially worth taking, but probably don't make the cut. I think Strangling Coil is pretty cool. The Everhand can go to 3 Fury, 3 damage. Shacklegeist Chains is interesting. If Warclive gets a kill, he gets another glory. But with Tome of Offerings around, I don't think you probably need that as well. And
yeah, Sadistic Strike is an interesting one. I don't think you want Warclive to make too many attacks. Like, if it goes to two or three attacks in a fight, maybe it's a too much.
Yeah, I know people have tried to make like a Varclav-centric build, and I think they've found some success with it, but I think it's more of a maybe a fun build or something like that.
Yeah. The fact that the queen has range two, that makes that much of a difference to me.
Yeah, she has so much utility there with the range, and her damage is excellent as well, that I feel like you may as well just tool up her, you know, pile everything on her, and you can get like Spirit Bond and things to make her even more accurate. Let's go to the next part, which is matchups. We've talked about it a little bit. What kind of matchups do they like to see across the table? What do they not like to see? And I guess let's also mention the board positions and how that matters in those situations.
Yeah. Okay. I think they do like splendidly against slow warbands. Like, yeah. I don't think they can lose game to Fire Slayers, even if you try.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
It might have happened, but I don't think it tried. Like, imagine the Fire Slayer trying to get onto the objective for inspiration, and then they play, like, Howling Vortex, and that's game.
Like, that's yeah, it. You'd really have to save a lot of those push cards.
So they do pretty much amazing against Skeletons, because, you know, they just are faster and have better faction economy. They have a tough matchup against, like we said, pink damage. So they fear Cursebreaker, they fear Farsliders, they fear Worldpath and Wrathburn to some extent. I think they have an interesting matchup against Profiteers. Because Profiteers can, as you said, make a lot of pressure, because once they inspire like Lund and Thundrick and Draxxur, they have three fighters that can snipe like everybody else and make a mess.
Yeah.
But also, they can be really good at, like, killing Thundrick before he inspires. It's somewhat doable for them.
Yeah, you can assassinate him pretty easily. Or not, maybe not easily, but they're, like you said earlier, they're still one of the best warbands at doing that kind of thing.
So they have an interesting matchup in that.
Yeah, and I've found that the Profiteers, with only two attack dice on most of their fighters, if you can get the Thorns to two dodge, that starts to get difficult to chew through, and their damage is relatively low. So if they're not, if they don't have a ping damage deck now that Shard Gale's gone, it can be hard to get the kills that you need.
But I don't know. I don't know you. I think sometimes you have some matchups with Thundrick against them, which is like, this is easy. Like, I have control of the board. And some other matchups, it's like, I don't have a way to win this game ever. Like, even if I do everything correctly, I just lose. So I think it's interesting.
Do you think the board has a big part of that?
The board is a big part of it. I think cards is a big part of it. Because the best card for Sky Vessel is easily countered by Howling Vortex.
Right. Yep. Yep. So although it also counters Howling Vortex half decently as well, if you can hold on to it after.
Yeah, and yeah, card order is important, like a lot of things in the season.
Yeah.
But yeah, I lost a game at Grand Clash on day two against Holly Brooks, which is a great player, because I was lying to try to go for a temporary victory. So I play my Seek the Sky Vessel, and then I play Howling Vortex, and that was game, because I had no way to get back on the objectives. The fire were in compromised situation, and he could just feast on whoever was left.
Yeah, that's true. I think anytime you're playing against them, you really have to be aware that they may have that card ready and not overcommit. So that's interesting.
They can fear Reaper too.
Mm-hmm.
Reaper does fairly good against Swarms. So if some upgrades come through, they can like chew against the Chain Rasp and make a lot of glory.
Yeah, I think the I think hunters in general, like I think Rippas and Wild Hunt and Hrothgorn in particular, I think that they, if they get the right upgrades on, they get Tome of Offerings, they get Trophy Belt on at the same time. A lot of the time, you'll only need a couple kills to really really get ahead, and then anytime if you can kill the Briar Queen early, the game is gonna go much better for you.
Yeah, so. They didn't have a really spectacular matchup against Gitz. Because as we mentioned, they are good at sniping crucial targets, mm-hmm. and Gitz doesn't tap them.
Right. Yeah. The cool thing about Gitz is it doesn't really matter what fighter you kill. They're always going to have somebody that can stand on something or hit you with an axe. So.
Yeah.
You're right. So. let's see. I think we'll move on to the next part now. Which is, if there were new players that were trying this warband for the first time, are there any tips you would have them keep in mind while they did that?
Okay, so my tip is try some games at deploying based on the cards you have. Mm. Like if you have Distraction or Howling Vortex, try to deploy the Queen in the middle of your board. If you have like Sudden Appearance, try to bring her back. If you have some surges that need to be scored right away, like you need, Branching Fate, so you want to make an attack early on, put it in front. But maybe you have the upgrades to keep her safe, so put it in front. So I think they're fun to play with because you can like modify your deployment based on the cards you have and on the matchup.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Is there a particular way you think you would recommend a new player try them out?
Use a lot of their cards because they're good. So that's good.
Yeah.
Good strategy to do. And try to just do what their objectives say to do. So stay on objectives and kill some people. It's fun.
Yeah, I think they're a good warband if you want to like learn how to do objective play, and then once you figure that out, you can kind of move into more aggressive play. And they're just so flexible that I think they can teach you a lot of different things about the game. They were probably a good choice for the starter set for the second season. great. Well, I think that is going to wrap up our conversation about the Thorns of the Briar Queen, unless you had anything else you wanted to add, Nick.
I'm not sure about it. I think I'm trying to play them from time to time to try different builds and to see if something like weird can come off. Like yesterday, I played against someone with a swarm deck. No, mm-hmm. against Mike with a swarm deck.
Yeah.
And it's not super reliable, but it's doable. Like if you have a small like scene, you can probably build something wanky and win a tournament with them.
Yeah.
So try, experiment. You can do it.
Yeah. Cool. Well, let's go into the next section now. We're going to do some rapid fire questions with you. These are just sort of fun, quick questions. Then we'll go. So what is your favorite fighter in the game, Nick?
Ooh, tough one. I think it's Gritch.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. He's one of my favorites as well. What is your favorite warband to play? And what do you think that says about you as a person?
Okay. I think... might be Thorns. I'm not sure it's Thorns. I cannot play them anymore because I'm bored of them at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know. I vary a lot of warbands. I play basically a lot of different stuff. So you can say I'm an unstable person or an hypocrite.
I don't know if anybody switches around as much as I do, so I'm not going
to
judge.
I don't know. You want me to talk about three different warbands? So.
Yeah. let's see. Is there if you could bring back one card from season one to championship format, what would it be?
Forceful Denial.
Oh, yeah, that would be really interesting right now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because I think there's no way to stop something right now. Like, if the opponent wants to remove an objective, how do you stop it?
Yeah, you really can. I mean, there's, I guess Lady Harrows have their Chilling Scream, and then you can do No Time, but that only works sort of. So, yeah, I think that would be a great one. Let's see. The next question is there a model that you have loved painting or can't wait to paint?
I love painting. I think Skateball Down was a lot of fun to paint. I think all this season was really fun to paint. Like, Beastgrave was probably the most fun season to paint. And I can't wait to finish my words, but because they're fun models to paint.
Yeah, this whole season has been great from a model perspective. And
yeah, I agree.
Really, that's one of the things I like about this whole game is I feel like all the models are a step above some of Games Workshop's other stuff, because there's certain things they can do with the easy to build that they can't always do otherwise. Although,
besides Crystal Will, why your arms come around your head like that?
Yeah, some of the fits are a little weird, but that's funny. Nah, I mean, one of the things I like about the thorns that we kind of passed over is I think their models are incredible.
The models are gorgeous. Yeah.
The queen in particular is just beautiful, and I'm just afraid I'm going to break that thorn whip.
Yeah, a fun trivia I can put in. I won, I think, a couple of trophy for best painted warband with my thorns, and I think it's the fastest warband that I painted.
Huh.
I breezed through them because I use some of the, it's not technical, but it's like the Warpstone Glow and the Nighthound Gloom. And use some dry brush of Celestial Gray, and that's it. Basically, you've done your job.
Yeah, well, I'll have to bother you to upload those to the website. Okay. I'm all of power. Let's see. The next question is there a least favorite fighter in the game for you?
Oh, least favorite fighter. I think everybody ate Crystal Will.
Yeah, that three damage.
Can I swear in this podcast?
We try not to.
Okay.
We do have some kids that will listen.
Okay, so somewhat quoting Gerald the professor, it was like, I ate Crystal Will because he friggin' always crit with his two swords. Yeah,
he does. Unless you're playing as him, and then it's...
Yeah, in that case.
Nothing.
You roll five dice and it's nothing.
Yeah, you'll Haymaker and still miss. So.
Yeah, but two dice is deadly.
It really is. I think it's just because you really don't think it should work. And it's probably, what, like a 40%? And that does happen a lot. So.
Yeah, I think in your brain, you remember all the five dice attack you missed. And it's like two swords never going to hit. And then it does.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true.
Oh, even when you roll one sword and you panic and you say, please, please roll something.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny against a one block fighter, like that one sword will still get it through half the time, you know? So dice are funny, and the ways that we can think about them, pretty funny too. Next question is, what warband would you like to see in the future? This can be from a mechanic perspective or a war, a faction or anything really.
Okay. I love to see a warband that doesn't rely on damage, but have cool mechanics of pushes and placing and swapping and stuff like that.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if you play Into the Breach, which is a cool video game, which has some mechanics similar to Underworld.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a squad of robots that they don't do damage. It's just a lot of change in the gameplay. They play in a totally different play style.
Yeah, that is interesting. That would be cool if they could... I guess it would probably be some kind of a control objective warband. So that would be cool.
Something the attack doesn't make damage, but you swap position with a fighter and has range 4.
Yeah, or maybe we'd see some knockback 2 or something too.
Yeah.
That could be cool too. Yeah, there's so many different cool things they could do. So it's very exciting. I think we have one more question. If you could change one thing about a current warband or card, what would it be?
Warband or card. Interesting. Yeah. Okay, I think I'll change something to Cryptic Companion.
Okay,
and I want him to not to be just restricted because it's boring. I want Cryptic Companion to work only if it was equipped at the start of the activation.
So you would have to, or like the start of the round, or?
Oh, the round, sorry.
Oh, okay. So if you do it in the first round, then you can get a glory then, but not afterwards?
Basically, you cannot do it in round one because you don't have it equipped at the beginning of the action phase.
Oh, yeah.
But you can equip it and then, like, so you cannot pull it off, like, at the last card. And I have Cryptic Companion for one glory.
Yeah. Give your opponent a little bit of a, like, a head start or, like, a...
Yeah. It can be fun because you basically create a target for your opponent to deal with, but you like declare it in fair advance.
Yeah, that would be a cool sort of mechanic.
Yeah, at that point, I don't think it goes restricted because right now it's restricted.
Yeah, because then if it comes out in the second round, you're only going to get one glory from it anyway. So, yeah,
top two glories. So, it's
fun. Right. Cool. Well, I think that's all the questions there. Where can people find you if they want to hear more from you or if they have any questions? Is there somewhere they can reach out?
I can lurk on Discord. Both of the Discord. I think that's the best way to find me on Underworld stuff. And I don't know, ask JD where to find me.
Yeah, I think you're on all the Reddit and the different Discords and stuff. So great. And we'll... I don't know if you're in our Discord or not, but if you are, then...
I think I'm not, because I'll just say I'm salty because you invited me and paid me off a couple of times, so I'm not.
I'm
but
sorry.
I will after this episode. I will after this episode.
Oh, great. Okay, well, I think that's it, unless you have anything else that you'd like to say.
No. Let's see ourselves on Discord and have some games, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. All right, everyone, that is going to be it for this episode. If you have any feedback, questions, or comments, let us know on Facebook at Path to Glory Podcast. You can also follow us on Podbean, where you can find the show notes for this episode. You can rate us on iTunes, which will help more people find us. And just thank you for listening, and we wish you the best of luck on your path to glory.
Hate you, Griswold.
Yes, we do.